Flying Saucers. Fact or fiction? On the Brian Skinner Show, UFO Info, with Gene Dupontier, editor of Saucers, Space, and Science magazine.
A bright 8-year-old boy, David Shute of Bertie, Ontario, and his mother are both convinced they saw a flying saucer last January. Mrs. Shute was getting ready to go out when her son called from a window to come and look at the flying saucer. It was all bright lights across the road and moving away in the distance. David said it was suddenly over the two houses across the street. Bright lights were flickering all around it and hurt his eyes. It came closer, and two things like legs came out from underneath it. Then they retracted, and the object flew away. The object emitted a buzzing sound and was the width of the two houses across the street. Mrs. Shute says it was pretty low because they couldn't have seen it through the porch windows if it wasn't. Even a skeptic can be excited by such sincerity and honesty of opinion. Was there a real flying saucer outside their window, or wasn't there? Your guess is as good as mine.
If you would like a copy of tonight's script, send a self-addressed stamped envelope to UFO Info, CHUM, Toronto 7. Flying Saucers, fact or fiction? On the Brian Skinner Show, UFO Info, with Gene Dupontier, editor of Saucers, Space, and Science magazine.
We're not the only ones to see flying saucers here in Canada and the United States. Russia has been seeing them for the past 20 years, too. And they admit that the UFOs are as much a puzzler to Soviet scientists as to their Western counterparts. Most of our reports come from eyewitnesses, but the Russians have been picking them up on radar screens. One scientist, identified as F. Zeigel, says the UFOs may really be from outer space. After a number of years of strict silence on the subject, this breakthrough in UFO news from Russia is welcomed by all UFO researchers. Zeigel says that there can be no doubt that UFOs exist. Of five possibilities listed by Zeigel as to what the flying saucers are, is one that they may be spaceships from an advanced civilization on another planet. One thing they are not, in the Russian scientist's view, is a new secret flying apparatus of one of the military powers on Earth. In the words of Zeigel, no one holds this view now.
If you would like a copy of tonight's script, send a self-addressed stamped envelope to UFO Info, CHUM, Toronto 7. Flying Saucers, fact or fiction? On the Brian Skinner Show, UFO Info, with Gene Dupontier, editor of Saucers, Space, and Science magazine.
What is probably one of the best UFO landing stories took place in Socorro, New Mexico, in the early evening of April 24, 1964. Patrolman Lonnie Zamora said he spotted an egg-shaped object on the desert about a mile south of Socorro. Upon closer investigation, the object was standing on four stilt-like legs, and he could see two human figures in white coveralls, each about 4 feet tall, standing near the contrivance. There was also a strange insignia on the side of the object, a red inverted V with bars through it. When Zamora got to within 100 yards of the machine, it flew away, narrowly missing a dynamite check by 2 feet. Police Sergeant Sam Chevis joined Zamora in a search, and they found four depressions in the soil and a rock that was grazed. A bush close by was supposedly burned by exhaust from the saucer. Army Captain Richard Holder checked both White Sands Missile Proving Grounds and nearby Holloman Air Force Base, but neither used any object comparable to Zamora's machine. J. Allen Hynek, special UFO consultant to the Air Force, said, "It is one of the soundest, best substantiated reports as far as it goes." One of the odd things concerning this incident is that no radar contact was made with the object. Could it be that some of these UFOs are using an anti-radar screen, thereby foiling our attempts to get visual evidence of their visitations? Or was this machine really a top-secret Air Force invention? Perhaps we'll never know for sure.
If you would like a copy of tonight's script, send a self-addressed stamp envelope to UFO Info, CHUM, Toronto 7. On the Brian Skinner Show, UFO Info, with Jean Dupontier, editor of Saucers, Space, and Science magazine.
One of the closest hangouts for UFOs is over Wanak, New Jersey, where they have a big reservoir. In January 1966, a UFO bored a hole about 9 feet wide in the reservoir ice as policemen stood helplessly by. During the next 2 months, UFOs continued to make the six-mile-long reservoir a meeting place. And last October, Wanak's mayor, Harry Wolf, and hundreds of residents watched an oversized star zoom by. Also in October, Sergeant Ben Thompson of the Reservoir Police said he was blinded for a short while by a UFO that came to within 50 yards of him. Thompson said it darted from one hill to another fast. In a split second, it covered a half mile. As it flew over the trees, the branches were attracted to the object. He only saw it for 2 or 3 minutes, but by that time, he was 100% blind. The object behind the dazzling white glare was circular with a half football shape beneath it. Chief John Cazaza of the Reservoir Police, who has also seen the UFOs, replaced the old floodlights with mercury vapor lamps, which really lit up the area. Unlike insects, which are attracted to light, the UFOs haven't been seen since the new bright lights became operative. But don't despair. Maybe they'll show up at a dimly lit Toronto reservoir anytime.
If you would like a copy of tonight's script, send a self-addressed stamp envelope to UFO Info, CHUM, Toronto 7. Flying Saucers. Fact or fiction? On the Brian Skinner Show, UFO Info, with Jean Dupontier, editor of Saucers, Space, and Science magazine.
Have UFOs ever been tracked on radar or other instruments that keep track of every body in space? The answer is yes. In July 1965, Argentine and Chilean technicians at separate Antarctic bases photographed and observed a reddish lens-shaped UFO. Strong interference was noted on meters and tapes. Radio interference prevented communications with the other bases. Later the same month, a luminous disk was sighted over the Azores, and at this precise moment, the Weather Bureau clock stopped functioning. In December 1964, Navy radar operators at Patuxent Naval Air Station, Maryland, tracked two UFOs traveling at a speed of 4,800 miles per hour. The objects were executing a right-angle turn and disappeared from the scope. In August 1965, radar equipment at the Wichita, Kansas Weather Bureau and Tinker Air Force Base in Oklahoma tracked four or five objects at an altitude of 22,000 feet. This occurred when visual sightings were being reported all over the Midwest states. And 1 year later, in August 1966, an orange-colored saucer was clocked at 90 miles an hour by a police radar set mounted in a patrol car. How about that?
If you would like a copy of tonight's script, send a self-addressed stamped envelope to UFO Info, CHUM, Toronto 7.
Fifth seen circular exhaust marks about 100 yards away from a dead horse and another area punched with six identical holes, each 2 inches wide and 4 inches deep, were found by Denver, Colorado investigators who revealed the story to the press last Sunday, October the 8th. An autopsy on the horse by a Denver pathologist showed that its abdominal, brain, and spinal cavities were empty. The pathologist, who wishes to remain anonymous, said the absence of organs is unexplainable, and the horse was definitely not killed by lightning. Alamosa County Sheriff Ben Phillips said the horse died a month ago and that they're trying to make a big mystery out of it. The investigating committee also found a circle on the ground 75 feet in diameter. The owners of the horse believed it to have been killed by inhabitants of a flying saucer. If this is true, it won't be the first time an animal was examined by UFO occupants. But the whole event, when the full story is known, may be a horse of a different color.
If you would like a copy of tonight's script, send a self-addressed stamped envelope to UFO Info, CHUM, Toronto 7. Flying Saucers, Fact or Fiction? On the Brian Spinner Show, UFO Info, with Jean Duplantier, editor of Saucers, Space, and Science magazine.
The alien spacecraft are getting closer to home, it seems. Port Elgin, here in Ontario, now has a flying saucer mystery on its hands, but no one is talking too much about it. A UFO appeared over Lake Huron on September 11th of this year. One sighting even entered the official log of the Point Douglas Nuclear Generating Station of the Ontario Hydro. About 17 persons witnessed the event. It seemed to hover over the lake about 1.5 miles out and drop something into the water. A plant employee said that he and others saw a similar craft return 2 nights later, and for the next 5 nights, the UFO appeared to be searching for the object that was dropped earlier in the week. Some witnesses thought it was a plane, but NORAD officials said no gunnery practice took place that night. Selfridge Air Force Base near Port Huron did not investigate the UFO and no radar contacts were made. All we can do is wait until someone comes up with a logical explanation. And we won't be alone in these thoughts, because that is exactly what the sighters at Port Elgin are doing.
If you would like a copy of tonight's script, send a self-addressed stamped envelope to UFO Info, CHUM, Toronto 7. Flying Saucers, Fact or Fiction? On the Brian Spinner Show, UFO Info, with Jean Duplantier, editor of Saucers, Space, and Science magazine.
19-year-old Alan Sayers of Lacombe, Alberta, saw a flying saucer on 2 different occasions in 1 week. But the story doesn't stop there. He claims the second one chased him for 2 full minutes. That was on August the 19th, 1967. While riding his motorcycle, he says he saw the object on the ground beside a lake. Shortly after, it was flying 250 feet off to his left and a little behind him. It was a bright red color with a black vertical stripe down the middle. After traveling about 2 miles on a twisting country road, Sayers came to a yield sign and the craft suddenly took off in a northerly direction, disappearing in seconds. Just before it took off, Sayers said the object caused a coughing and wheezing sensation in his motorcycle. The bike didn't work very well, and he claims to have felt an unusual rise in temperature. The air was hot only when the object was above him. He reported the incident to the Lacombe police station. Constable Dale Nesbitt said that Sayers was very serious and looked frightened. What do you think? Was it a lot of hot air, or do you think if it happened to you, you'd keep your cool?
If
you would like a copy of tonight's script, send a self-addressed stamped envelope to UFO Info, CHUM, Toronto 7.
Flying saucers, fact or fiction? On the Brian Skinner Show, UFO Info, with Jean Duplantier, editor of Saucers, Space, and Science magazine.
Did you know that in 1954, a 1,000-square-mile area in the province of Alberta was put aside as an invitation for flying saucers to land? 13 years ago, there was a rash of UFO sightings, and this prompted a landing site for any extraterrestrials that wanted to settle down for a while. But nothing has happened in all that time, and officials have just about given up hope. The place is at Suffield, and is a top-secret research station where work is carried out on bacteriological and chemical defense projects. No civilian or defense aircraft are allowed to fly over without permission. The officials thought that if some superintelligence was directing the alien spacecraft, they would recognize Suffield as a good spot for a landing without harm coming to them. The officials better think again, because it seems that the UFO pilots took their directive seriously and also refused to go near the place. They also haven't landed at St. Paul, Alberta, where another landing pad has been built by the local townspeople. And yet, all over Alberta this past year, in a number of places, strange things have been seen in the air and strange round marks on the ground have been found. With all this activity, chances are getting better for a landing at Suffield and St. Paul's any day now.
If you would like a copy of tonight's script, send a self-addressed stamped envelope to UFO Info, CHUM, Toronto 7.
We may still have use for those landing pads at St. Paul and Suffield, Alberta. Early in August of this year, 9 complete circles up to 36 feet in diameter and 6 inches wide were found on a farm southwest of Camrose, Alberta. The circles have the appearance of having been impressed by some large object sitting in the grass for some length of time. Whatever made the rings had crushed a stout willow fence post in one spot. 20 area residents have witnessed UFOs in the past 7 months. While a herd of cows in one field was apparently undisturbed when the rings were made, there was talk of other farmers' animals being terrified at night. One farm wife saw a huge red glow from a window at midnight and at first thought it was a fire. The object skimmed across a field and disappeared. On July the 3rd, a woman heard a car drive into her field at 11:30 p.m. one night and then heard 2 shots being fired. An object with multicolored lights rose up from the field and flew rapidly away. The occupants of the car were not identified. And as the saucers leave rings on the ground, it leaves the investigators going around in circles trying to explain the phenomenon.
Editor of Saucers, Space, and Science magazine.
At 7:15 p.m., a meteor flashed across the skies of Peterborough, Ontario, on April 5th of this year. At 7:45 p.m., a blinding lime-green light illuminated the trees in a car driven by Mrs. Jim Dauncey of Selwyn, accompanied by her 2 children. She jammed on the brakes. Unable at first to see what caused the light, a sphere about 30 inches in diameter came into view close to the hood of the car. She said, "It was so bright it burned our eyes." It seemed to be a vapor sphere, slightly flattened at the top and bottom. In the middle of the sphere was a luminous band of metal. 2 vapor trails about 4 inches wide and about 18 inches apart were at the bottom and to one side of the object. It then rose extremely fast to a point above a large tree at the crossroads. Just then, 2 lights appeared a short distance away from the vapor. The lights were red and white and went on and off alternately. They seemed to be trying to approach the vapor ball from several different angles. Each time they tried it, the lights backed away and finally disappeared. The vapor ball rose even higher and moved westward. Mrs. Dauncey started her car and continued up the road until it got too muddy. When they turned to come back, the object changed direction and began to move east with them. When she stopped the car, the object stopped too. When she made a sudden stop to experiment, the object stopped too with such suddenness that it seemed to rock. By the time they reached their destination, the object was much farther away and appeared as a 4-inch vapor-wrapped glowing oval. Needless to say, Mrs. Dauncey no longer doubts UFOs. How would you like to see two little men about 4 feet tall in a field beside a saucer-shaped craft? Stanley Moxon of Toronto says he did when he was driving along Highway 15 near Joyceville, Ontario, in mid-August of 1967. At 4 a.m., he arrived at the Smith Falls police station and told Constable Steve Whitten about a strange experience. As he passed Joyceville, he saw a green light in a field, so he turned off his lights and pulled to the side of the road to watch two little men with white helmets and uniforms working around the spacecraft. He switched on his lights again, and the little men jumped into the craft and took off at high velocity and flew out of sight. Constable Whitten questioned Moxon in great detail and said there is no reason to doubt his story. One thing is certain. While many UFOs have been sighted this past year, more are also landing, which makes us wonder, when will the first conversation with the pilots of these craft take place, and what will they say? Where's the nearest service station?
If you would like a copy of tonight's script, send a self-addressed stamped envelope to UFO Info, CHUM, Toronto 7.
Flying saucers are seen all over the world. This next report comes from England. A giant cone-shaped object hovered 15,000 feet above 7 Coast Guardsmen. For more than an hour, they watched it through high-powered binoculars. As the object hovered over Brixham, Devon, it slowly revolved, revealing some sort of door in its side. An aircraft approached, flew around it, and then flew away. Eventually, the object vanished behind the clouds after climbing to the 20,000-foot level. Scores of people along the Devon coast telephoned police stations to ask about the object, sighted at high noon on April 28, 1967. The Coast Guard's report about the object was forwarded within minutes to the Ministry of Defense by the RAF at Plymouth. The result puzzled the Brixham Coast Guards. The ministry at first denied it ever received the report. Later on, they revealed they did receive a report, but it was not logged. They suggested the object was a reflection of car headlights or some sort of meteorological phenomena. Harry Johnson, the chief officer at the station, said, "It's just laughable for anyone to suggest to a body of highly trained observers that this was the reflection of car headlights. It was noon. The object was made of something very highly polished and reflected the sunlight almost like a star in appearance." It seems to me that the ministry, in giving its explanations of this phenomenon, has taken a page right out of Project Blue Book, where they are experts at this kind of answer.
Saucers, fact or fiction? On the Brian Skinner Show, UFO Info, with Jean Dupontier, editor of Saucers, Space, and Science magazine.
A retired professor of international fame, who used to play violin duets with Albert Einstein, believes flying saucers are planning an invasion of Earth. Physicist and engineer Paul Santorini, whose pioneering work helped him in the development of radar, the fuses for the Hiroshima atom bomb and the napalm bomb, came out of a 2-year retirement to lecture to the Greek Astronautical Society and to give an interview to Athens Radio. Professor Santorini is not among the lunatic fringe of scientists attracted by the publicity potential of flying saucer investigation. The professor attributed the great New York blackout of November the 9th, 1965, and two smaller but similar power failures in the eastern United States and Mexico about the same time to flying saucer activity. All three blackouts coincided with peak flying saucer activity in the areas affected, with the saucers cruising along the power lines. He said there were two possibilities concerning the beings who visit Earth in flying saucers. First, if these beings are of about the same biological construction as we, they cannot come from outside the solar system. Second, if these beings come from outside the system, then their bodily construction must be entirely different than ours. He believes that the saucers are currently engaged in surveying Earth, taking back with them plant and animal samples. He inferred here that an invasion might be imminent. In 1947, the Greek army supplied him with a team of engineers to investigate what were believed to be Russian missiles flying over Greece. It was established they were not missiles, and the army authorities, after conferring with the Pentagon, ordered them to discontinue the observations. Since then, he charged Greece has also joined the world conspiracy to deny that the objects regularly visiting Earth are flying saucers.
If you would like a copy of tonight's script, send a self-addressed stamped envelope to UFO Info, CHUM, Toronto 7.
There have been a number of reports of unusual sounds cutting in on radio and telephones lately, and no source can be found. This report is no exception. On September 6, 1967, at about 10:30 p.m., Dr. Edward Goldstein was driving along a desolate section of road, circling around the Bethpage State Park on Long Island on his way home from work. Without warning, an oddly illuminated cigar-shaped object materialized in the western sky about 300 feet distant, hovering about 50 feet off the ground. Minutes later, there appeared to the south a similar object glowing with the same ghastly rose-colored incandescence. Dr. Goldstein at this point abandoned his usual composure and tried to drive his car to the road below. But he says his car went slower and slower until it came to a dead stop. Dr. Goldstein went on to say that at this point, he heard some sort of faint, weird chatter coming from his car radio, which was turned off. Nothing the voices said was understandable, which sounded like four men talking. After about half an hour had elapsed, the twin objects vanished as abruptly as they had come, leaving no clue as to their origin. This is the second time the doctor has sighted UFOs on that same road in the same spot. If you should discuss the story with the doctor, you are apt to come away at least partially convinced that flying saucers do exist.